Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. And today, I am doing a special episode. It is a Kaiju Carnage Presents episode in which I talk about whatever kind of movie that I feel like talking about and whatever genre that I feel like talking about. And that is what today's is. Now, the thing is, this is, at the time of this recording, it is December 1st. This Kaiju Carnage Presents is set to be done. It's November's Kaiju Carnage Presents. I'm aware that I'm a day late. I kind of, not gonna lie, I forgot. I straight up forgot. I've got no problem owning up to it. Yeah, yesterday I was super, super busy, which is normally the day that I would watch the film and record, and then I would have released the episode this morning, on Wednesday mornings. But a very good friend of mine retired from his job, the company that I currently work for, and he had been there for 38 years, and, you know, like, we just had a real nice farewell for him and all of that stuff, and it just completely slipped my mind to do it. And I was at work today, and for some reason, like, my brain was telling me at work today that today was Tuesday. And one of my coworkers, you know, we had a kind of a hectic day, and he said something along the lines of like, oh, well, you know, we only have to work two more days and then it's the weekend. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, no, we have to work three more days. Like, today's Tuesday, right? And he said, no, today's Wednesday. And I was like, doggone it. So yeah, I got to think about all day while I was at work that I was supposed to do Kaiju Carnage Presents on the final day of November. And now here we are doing it for December. So there are going to be two bonus episodes of Kaiju Carnage Presents that will be done this month, because this one, while I'm doing it today, is meant to be November's. So, there's that. Now, before I jump into the episode, I'd like to encourage everybody to go give me a like and or follow on Facebook. If you listen to my episodes in chronological order, you would already know this, but if you just jumped into this because you wanted to listen about Ready Player One, going ahead and tell you, I had a little mishap about a week ago with my personal Facebook account. I posted a picture that I thought was funny. I did not find to be offensive in the slightest. Going ahead and let you guys know what it was. It was the kid that, you know, was in trial and all that stuff. Kyle Rittenhouse or Rittenhorse, whatever his name is. It was a picture comparing him to a Monsters Incorporated character, basically saying that they looked similar whenever he was crying, like they had the same, like, pooched out lips or something like that. I saw it, thought it was funny, I shared it. Apparently, some individual that was on my friends list did not think it was all that funny for whatever reason, be it maybe he's a diehard supporter of the kid, I don't know, but he did not think the picture was all that funny, so he reported me to Facebook. And then Facebook apparently decided, oh yeah, that picture is super, super offensive, and we cannot allow you to continue. So they banned my personal account. Now, personal accounts, you know, whatever. I had another, I've got numerous Facebook accounts. I used to do some role-playing stuff on Facebook for, you know, for superheroes and all that kind of stuff, because I'm a big nerd. And so I have multiple Facebook accounts. So to lose my personal one wasn't that big of a deal. I'll just shift one of the others that's been dormant for years and years and years. I'll just shift that into my new personal account. The only problem was that my original personal account was the only account that was listed as an admin on my Kaiju Carnage Facebook page. So whenever the personal account got deleted, my Kaiju Carnage a Godzilla / King Kong podcast Facebook page also got deleted. And I have since created another one. It has the same exact profile picture, the same exact name, and all of that. It is very new. There is hardly no pictures or anything like that on it. I am currently sitting at almost 130 likes / follows. And let me tell you, it's pretty discouraging to go from nearly 1,200 to 120-something. So I'm trying to build that community back up slowly but surely. My old listeners, my old fans have been, you know, they've figured out that something wasn't right because I haven't been posting a whole lot, and they've gone into the search to try and find the page, and they've been liking the new one. So welcome back to any of you that have refound my page. Thank you for all of the kind words and messages and support that you guys have given me in this time. Look, you know, yeah, it's discouraging, it's disheartening, but, you know, we're going to go on. I'm just going to keep on trucking along. The Facebook page was, you know, it was fun to do. It didn't really impact my overall listens all that much because I've got a loyal enough following at this point to where people know when to tune in for my episodes. So it didn't impact my overall listens, but I had gotten to where I really enjoyed having the page and just posting kaiju pictures or fun facts and things like that, posting little announcements of things that were happening and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the 1 year anniversary for the page was coming up, and I was planning on, you know, wanting to do something kind of special for that. And once all that got jerked out from under me, it was kind of upsetting. And I went probably about 4 or 5 days without even, I'm like, I'm not even going to bother. I debated quitting Facebook entirely because of basically some people getting butthurt over a joke that I posted, and I'm not, you know, that kind of thing just aggravates me. So I debated just abandoning Facebook entirely and going with Instagram, Reddit, and trying Twitter once again. And yes, I'm aware that Instagram is owned by Facebook, but Instagram has an entirely different set of rules and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not upset with Instagram at this point, and I get more activity on Instagram anyway. But, you know, it is what it is. Finally, I decided to go ahead and create the page again, and I'm slowly starting to build it back up. I haven't been posting a whole lot on there because, quite frankly, I'm still a little butthurt about the whole situation. But, you know, it is what it is. So, okay, guys, today's episode that I'm going to be doing is on the 2018 film called Ready Player One. And this is a film that I have some opinions about, and it is based on a book that I also have some opinions about. The book came out in 2011. Now, I'm not going to lie. I remember when the book came out, and it's just the kind of guy I am. If somebody extremely, like, overhypes something, it kind of pushes me away from it because there's so much hype, there's so many positive things that get said about something. To me, I'm like, there's no way it's going to possibly live up to that hype. And also, quite frankly, I just get sick and tired of hearing about it. And being a nerd that I am, I have lots of nerd friends. And whenever that book came out, that's all any of them wanted to talk about was Ready Player One, Ready Player One, Ready Player One. And I got so sick and tired of hearing about that book to where I was just like, nope, not going to mess with it. I don't want nothing to do with it. And so I skipped it. I didn't read it. You know, fast forward to about 2017. The movie is full on in the works. They've released a trailer or two for it. You know, starting to see the trailers, and I'm kind of like, I didn't know anything about the book. I didn't know what the basic story was or anything. And so starting to see the trailers and all of the pop culture references that are in it, I was like, okay, you know, it's been long enough, like a lot of the hype has died down about the book. Let me just go on ahead and get The Rascal and read it, and let me see, you know, let me see what it's about. So, I got the book, I read the book, and I can honestly say that I really enjoyed it. But even though I really enjoyed it, does not mean that I don't have my issues with it. Like, it had its moments. There were some moments where it was, like, really cool, really exciting, and all of that. There were other moments in the book where it was just a purity drag. And, like, a very difficult read. Like, I was super bored. I was ready, like, okay, come on, like, wrap this up and all that kind of stuff. Some of the characters were, you know, I didn't too much care for a whole lot of the characters. There were other characters that I really, really liked. So, that was pretty much my opinion of the book. And then I watched the movie, and I basically have the same opinion about the movie. It has its moments. Like, there are parts of it to where I'm like, this is great. This was amazing. I like the visuals of it. It's a very beautiful film. The visuals of it is very, very, very well done. Naturally, I like all of the references that are done. But there are also parts in it to where, yeah, it's also kind of a drag. And it just kind of makes you be like, okay, come on, like, wrap this up. Move this forward. There are parts of the movie where I get why so many parts of the movie was changed from the book. And I'll get into that towards the end of the episode. But there are parts of the movie to where I'm like, nah, you know, I could have done without that. Or I wish they would have done this a little bit differently. Or, man, I really wish they could have gotten the copyrights to this particular character or that particular character or something like that. But, you know, overall, I really, really enjoyed it. Even though I do have some issues with it, same thing with the book. I watched the movie just prior to recording this episode. I saw the film twice in theaters. Like, you know, I've got no problem saying that I enjoy it. But there are parts of it that I wish could have gone differently. So now with all of that said, let's actually jump into the episode and talk about the movie. Now, like I said before, the movie is based on a book that came out in 2011. Now, even though the book came out in 2011, in 2010, Warner Brothers acquired the rights to the book, the film rights to it, for an adaptation. This is nothing out of the ordinary for movie studios to do. Like, if they find out that a book is up and coming and they feel that it's going to be very popular, they feel like it can be a big money maker, they'll go on ahead and secure movie rights to that book so that, you know, whenever the book comes out, people will get hyped about it, and then they'll be like, oh, and there's a movie coming out in 3 or 4 years or something like that, you know, and that'll cause fans of the book to want to go see it. Or you have cases like the original Jurassic Park, where the movie and the book was pretty much released simultaneously, the same way with its sequel, The Lost World. And so about a year before the book came out, Warner Brothers secured the rights to make a movie of the book in 2010. Ernest Cline, who was the author of the book, he was brought on to write the first draft for the movie. So he comes in, and naturally how it goes with it, with movies and everything, very, 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 very rarely does a first draft get written of a screenplay or a script, and that's the one that they go with. So even though he was the writer of the book, whenever he wrote the first screenplay, they still, like, brought in people to rewrite the scripts. And one of the individuals that rewrote this script was a man by the name of Zach Penn. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, it's because he has written the screenplays for a number of popular movies. He's had some misses as well. But he's written the story for a few popular movies. Now, one of those movies is X-Men 2. And another one was he wrote the story for The Avengers whenever it came out. Now, one of his duds that he has written was X3, The Last Stand. You know, can't win them all. So, you know, and he's got some other writing credits to his name, but those three I figured would be the big three to where people would be like, okay, all right, you know, have a pretty good idea about what type of writing style this guy has. Now, whenever he took over, Ernest Cline had written a script that was, you know, save for like copyright issues, because the copyright, being able to use certain copyrights in a book is far different from being able to use them in a movie. And Cline had written a screenplay that mirrored some of the scenes that was in his book. Whenever Zach Penn came along, he was basically like, this is going to be boring for the audience to watch. And just a number of scenes that, in particular, that he cited, there's no way he really wanted to have an audience have to go through that, would be, one, the main character of Wade playing Joust against the King to win the first key, because it's pretty much just them playing an arcade game. Another one would be whenever he does a complete and total playthrough of Pac-Man, whenever he gets his extra life, and then a whole bunch of scenes of them just quoting movies and scenes and things like that, and just, you know, because while Ernest Cline did come up with a decent story, let's be honest here, one of my issues with the book is that it was just way too heavy on pop culture references. Now, there are plenty of scenes where it's like, okay, the particular vehicle that the character is using is an X-Wing, but he's playing with, you know, his weapon is a Halo weapon of some kind, you know, or whatever like that. You know, it just mixed and matched a lot of things. But there were lots of parts in the book where it would be just some people getting together and basically just being Wikipedia in a conversation. Well, you know, they start talking about this video game. Well, it came out in this year, and it was produced by this person, and it was, you know, the basic story was written by this person. And it's a conversation of people just, like, trying to one-up one another. And it could, you know, at first it's like, okay, this is pretty cool, like, I'm learning some stuff. But the further along that you read the book, the more that you're just like, oh my God, like, he's doing this again. You know, like, come on, like, just wrap this up and get on with the book. And so Zach Penn decided to eliminate a whole bunch of scenes that was basically like that, to where he figured the audience would just be, you know, pretty bored with it. Because as much as I enjoyed Ready Player One as a book, and as much as I enjoyed it as the movie, the book did get some negative reception for some of the things that I just mentioned. Its sequel, Ready Player Two, which I have not yet read, I will get to it eventually, but Ready Player 2 was, well, let's be honest here, I have yet to hear a single positive statement ever made from anyone in person or online or anything talking good about Ready Player 2. They say it has its moments, but overall, they're like, it's, one individual that I saw put it probably in the best way that I could think to put it, said that it has all of the faults of the first book, but very few of the pluses of the first book. Now, I never let critics or fan opinion or anything like that influence my opinion on wanting to read a book or watch a movie or something like that. I was just throwing all of that out there just so I can give you guys some info as to how the book was received. I don't care what anybody else said about the book. Eventually, I'm going to get to it. The only reason I haven't yet is because I've, you know, I go through spurts whenever it comes to reading. There'll be times like I'll go a year or 2 years and I won't even touch a book. I won't buy a book. I won't have nothing to do with a book. And then there'll be other times where, like, I'll read one book and it's like it opens up the floodgates. And as soon as I'm done with that book, I pick up the next one and I'll read, you know, 7 or 8 books in a month or something like that. Like, yeah. I mean, that's just how it goes for me. And I'm just not in a reading mood right now. So I have not gotten to Ready Player 2 yet, but it is coming. So a lot of the scenes that Zack Penn deemed would be too boring were eliminated. Now, in 2015, about 5 years after the rights for the book were acquired, that's whenever Steven Spielberg was hired on and they began doing casting for the movie. Elle Fanning was one of the front runners to play the character of Artemis, and I've got some opinions about Artemis in this movie. I'm not very thrilled with the way that they portrayed Artemis as to how they portrayed her in the book, and I'll get to all that towards the end of the episode. But Elle Fanning was a front runner for the role of Artemis, but Olivia Cooke ended up getting the role. And believe it or not, here's a pretty cool little cameo appearance that could have been. Anyone who's watched the movie knows that there is a very prominent scene dealing with The Shining. A certain actor was approached by the studio to make a cameo appearance in this scene, and that actor is Jack Nicholson. They asked him to come and just, you know, do a cameo appearance. I don't know what the cameo would have been. I don't know if they would have de-aged him with CGI. I don't know if it would have been like, well, he's been trapped in the house for years and years and years, as long as he has, to where he's actually aged a bit. I don't know what the cameo was going to be. But whenever Jack Nicholson was approached about it, he actually declined the offer because he had retired from acting and he was going to stick to his guns and said, no, I am retired. I do not do that anymore. And so he turned it down. So, you know, it is what it is. And so after casting was done, you know, we've got our director with Spielberg. Production began in 2016. Now in the film, all of the main events pretty much take place in Columbus, Ohio. It was not shot in Columbus, Ohio. The film was shot in Birmingham, London. that's just where it was shot. And for some of the props, the caravan homes were partially built and somewhat used. For the caravan homes, there was a controlled explosion in the scene whenever the at the stacks. Whenever there's an explosion, there was actually a controlled explosion that was done during that time. The authorities were called by locals that lived in the area because there was absolutely no notice whatsoever that the production crew was going to be doing a controlled explosion. And so there's people just sitting there, you know, whatever they do over there, you know, in their spare time. I'm sure they do just a lot of the same stuff that everybody else does, watching TV or hanging out with their family or whatever, and then all of a sudden this massive explosion goes off. And so they started calling the authorities, and I looked to see if there was any repercussions for doing the controlled explosion, and I couldn't find anything. And if there is something out there and I just missed it, then I'm blind as a bat, and it is what it is. Spielberg had a very difficult time making this movie, which Spielberg has, you know, he's a very capable director, and he puts so much time and effort into his movies to where he pretty much has a difficult time on a lot of the films that he decides to do. But he flat out said that this is his most difficult movie that he had done since Saving Private Ryan, which is also an amazing film. Just one of the things that he would do was he would have 3-hour meetings 3 times a week just talking about the special effects and people running over things about what they were going to do and how things were going to look. How they pretty much decided a lot of the references that they were going to use were they just brought a whole bunch of pictures of heroes that, you know, were just like, hey, this is what we're going to use. Chun-Li from Street Fighter, the Ninja Turtles, Master Chief from the Halo franchise, Battletoads, RoboCop. Yeah, so many references that are in the movie. But they just brought, you know, pictures of these people and they put them on this board with thumbtacks. And basically, they would be like, okay, this is, you know, as they would come up with scenes for what they were going to do, they would be like, okay, in this scene we can have Harley Quinn and Deathstroke or something like that. And then in this scene we can have, you know, RoboCop. And in this scene, the Cyclops from the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad actually makes an appearance in this film. And, I did an episode on Cyclops from the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, so feel free to go on back and give that episode a listen if you haven't done so already. But yeah, so they had pictures of all of these heroes and all of these characters, and as they would be shooting a scene or getting ready to do a scene or write a scene or whatever they would do, they would just look up at the board and be like, okay, we're going to use these 3 characters for this right here. We're going to use these 5 characters for this right here. And they just kept going and kept going and kept going. And it was by doing this method that they decided, it's when they really realized, like, we're going to need a bunch of characters. Like, this isn't, you know, they didn't want to just have, like, a dozen references. I mean, let's be honest here. Nobody read the book and nobody went to watch this movie just to be like, oh, yeah, you know, the characters are very driven, and I felt the development of them was very wonderful, and, you know, the story itself just kept me on the edge of my feet, on my seat. You know, no. People didn't care about that. People were intrigued by the book because of the pop culture references. People were sold on the movie because they would see a trailer and see the amount of pop culture references. So they wanted to have as much references as they possibly could in this movie. And boy, howdy, did they have some. I mean, every time I watch this movie, I notice new things. I notice something new that I had never noticed before. And I'm like, oh, wow. You know, like, I can't believe I never noticed that or anything like that. Like, you know, it happens. A lot of the references, let's be honest here, there was a lot of people that were upset about the movie because it did not contain references that were in the book and they wanted to see transferred onto screen. The thing is, it's different when you're writing a book because Ready Player One could kind of be viewed as like a parody or a simulation. So he was able to write, you know, he was able to write the book with as many references as he could, as he did, because it was easier. A movie is not like that. Images are copyrighted and all of that kind of stuff. So many of the references that were done in the book, anything dealing with Star Wars or, you know, Toho or anything like that, or, you know, anything else. Like, if Warner Brothers, who was the studio that was doing the film, did not have the copyrights to the references, they could not do it. That's why there are so many Warner Brothers properties that are in this movie. But now, with that being said, there are a few references that are not Warner Brothers properties, and the reason why those are in the movie is strictly because of Steven Spielberg's reputation. And that whenever he would do a movie for another studio or something like that, they would just be like, man, go ahead. Go ahead and use, you know, you created it, you did the movie and all that. Yes, we own the rights to it, but, you know, go ahead and do this and do that. And there were other things that he didn't have anything to do with, Very little of what he actually did himself ended up being in the movie. But a lot of it was just, you know, he just asked. He was like, hey, can I use this? And some people were like, absolutely, yes, you can use this. And others were like, no, you can't use it. Some of the references that were in there, some of the more prominent ones, one of the ones that didn't end up being in the movie was Blade Runner. There were supposed to be some Blade Runner references that were done, but the new film Blade Runner 2049 was pretty close to being released around the time of this film, and they didn't want confusion to happen or anything like that, so they opted out not to have any Blade Runner references. The Shining, Spielberg was able to get to be able to use the stuff with The Shining, and that's why The Shining is so prominent in the film, was because he was basically using it as an homage to his good friend, Kubrick. While doing The Shining parts of the movie, there were parts of the set of The Shining that were rebuilt, and they used Kubrick's film as the blueprint and actually physically rebuilt some of the sets. And so I thought that was pretty cool. And then the rest of it was just, you know, created with CGI and, you know, went on from there. Now, one of the bigger things that people were upset about, that they were like, I wish that this could have been in the movie. I wish that this could have been in the movie, but it is what it is. And that is Ultraman. Ultraman is part of the climax in the book where he has a battle with a Showa-era Mechagodzilla. And people were looking forward to seeing that. I would have absolutely loved to see that. But at the time, Ultraman, the character of Ultraman, was going through a legal dispute. And so Spielberg could not use Ultraman, like, because it was just a legal battle going on with him. Nobody really knew, like, you know, it was over copyrights and stuff like that. So he couldn't use it. So to make up for it, he decided to include the Iron Giant, which is a fan favorite. I've never met anybody that does not like the animated version of the Iron Giant. The animated film is very different from the book that it is based on. Go on ahead and read the book. It's a decent read. It is a children's book. It is very short, but it is very, very, very different from the animated film that we got. But check out the book. It's not bad. And also, something that I was super, super hyped about, they decided to include the the RX-78-2 Gundam from the original manga / anime and all of that. Amuro's Gundam mobile suit that he pilots. So I was very, very happy that the Gundam made an appearance, because I'm a massive Gundam fan, which there will be some Gundam content coming with the podcast in season 2. So stay tuned for that. Now, Spielberg actually removed a lot of references from his own films because, quite frankly, he didn't want to seem like he was full of himself. He didn't want to, you know, sit there and be like, oh, well, I'm the director of this movie, so I'm going to use references from just about every single movie that I've ever done. So he removed most of them. It was actually Ernest Klein, the author of the book, that actually was basically like, dude, you've got to have some of your stuff in it. Like, you're an icon in the world of cinema. Like, you have to have some of your stuff that's in there. So a few things of his did make it in. Probably, you know, one of the things that he is most famous for that shows up towards the beginning of the film, and that would be the T-Rex from Jurassic Park. Now, there is a possible sequel in the works to Ready Player One. It will be a film adaptation of the book Ready Player Two. And according to Ernest Klein, it is currently in the very early stages of development. Now, my opinions on this movie, I've already shared a pretty good chunk of my opinions of the movie. But one opinion in particular that I've saved towards the end, because it's pretty negative, I'm not going to lie. It deals with Artemis. I do not like the way that they portrayed Artemis in this movie versus how she was in the book. And, you know, I don't want to sound cliche, but in the book, she was about as strong and independent of a woman as you could get. She didn't rely on anybody. She didn't. She was her own individual. She would accomplish just about anything and everything all on her own. There's a pretty good chunk where her and Wade go their separate ways, and she actually beats him to the second key. Like, it was just. She was such an awesome character in the book. And then in the movie, they basically just turned her into, like, she didn't want, in the book, she didn't want any help. She didn't want tips. She didn't want clues. She wanted to figure things out on her own. And then one of the very first interactions that we have with her in the movie is whenever Wade finds out that the way to get the first key is to drive backwards. She's like, "Oh, you figured something out." And then she's like, "Tell me." Like, basically saying, tell me what you figured out. Tell me what you're about to do and all that kind of stuff. Artemis in the book would not have been like that. And in the movie, she's just, you know, it's like she becomes very attracted and loving towards Wade very, very quickly. Whereas in the book, it was something of a chore for Wade to get her, you know, into a relationship or whatever. And, you know, it's like they just threw her to the wolves in this movie. Like, she immediately, like, okay, she's the love interest. All right, well, anything she's going to do is to help Wade, is to make sure that Wade wins. She would rather Wade win. Like, you know, the part in the movie where she pretty much tells Wade, "You go and get the key. Like, you win this game," and all that kind of stuff. There's a part in the book where, like, in the final battle, after everyone dies, she is furious. She was legit trying to win so that she could win the game and everything. And whenever her character died, she was not happy about it. And it's like, in the movie, it was just like, "Oh, well, we all died, but Wade's still alive. It's okay. He's the golden boy. He's the main hero. We'll all just, you know, just sacrifice ourselves for him." And, you know, I don't care for how they did Artemis in the film. But now, one thing about the movie that I love, and I get on YouTube quite often and watch it, and that is the scene where the Gundam and the Iron Giant, briefly the Iron Giant, throw down with Mechagodzilla. I was very happy to see Mechagodzilla be in this film. I actually prefer this version of Mechagodzilla over the 2021 version of Mechagodzilla that we got in Godzilla vs. Kong, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, the fight between the Gundam and Mechagodzilla was amazing. It was great. I wish it was longer, but you know, I got to witness on screen a Gundam versus Mechagodzilla, and that's something that, you know, about 5 years ago, I can honestly say was something I never thought I would ever get to see that, and now I've seen it. So, and what's really cool is that after me and my brother went and watched the movie, he has not read the book, but I told him to come watch the movie, and he enjoyed it. After we watched the movie, we saw the scene with the Gundam. On the way home, I told him, I said, "Somebody in some studio is going to see that movie, see how well the Gundam just worked out in live action, like on screen." I say live action, it's CGI, but how well he worked on like the big screen. I said, "Mark my words, not much longer after this movie comes out, there's going to be a live action Gundam film that's going to happen." And as of right now, Legendary is currently in working on a live action Gundam film and has actually released some concept art for their Gundam film that they are working on. So, just glad to say, I'm just glad. I just wanted to tell you all that I called that. I was very happy about that. And I can't wait for that movie to come out, and I will definitely do an episode on it whenever it does come out. So, alrighty guys, that pretty much does it for Ready Player One. Now, this was a Kaiju Carnage Presents, so I will be doing my regular episode that at the time of this recording will be released on Saturday in 3 days. And that film is going to be The Terror of Mechagodzilla that came out in 1975. I've decided to do The Terror of Mechagodzilla because that is going to be my final episode of season one. And The Terror of Mechagodzilla is the final final film in the Showa era Godzilla films. So I can't wait to jump into that one. And, you know, the 1 year anniversary for the podcast is fast approaching. And I'm super excited. We are officially in December. I'm working out a way to possibly do a Christmas giveaway. I have something in my possession that I already own. I purchased this specifically for a giveaway. And so if you're interested in doing a giveaway, just get on Facebook, message me, and say that you would be interested in it, because if not a whole lot of people want to take part in it, I'm probably not going to mess with it. But, you know, let me know. Send me a message to see if you're interested in it. I'll go ahead and give you all a hint. It is an action figure that is very rare to find in stores, and it sells for somewhat pricey online. And it is a newer figure. It came out this year. So that's all I'm going to say for right now. So if you're interested in taking part in the giveaway, just go ahead and send me a message on Facebook or Instagram and tell me that you're interested. And, you know, whenever I get ready to do the giveaway as a Christmas present or something like that, I will absolutely let you guys know on Instagram and or Facebook. And speaking of Instagram, go on ahead and give me a like and a follow, or just a follow, however in the world you call it on Instagram. It's my personal Instagram account, and it is K-A-L Woodman. That is my name, Cal Woodman, Kaiju Carnage. And just give me a follow on there. Again, trying to build the community back up for Facebook, so Kaiju Carnage at Godzilla/King Kong podcast. Going ahead and go give that a like and a follow. Go check me out on Reddit. I am Kaiju_Carnage, and I don't mess with Twitter. So, alrighty guys, again, thank you for all of the love, all of the support. You guys are the best fans and best community that anybody could ask for. I'm just an old southern redneck that loves big monsters, and the fact that you people tune in every single week to listen to me talk about them and just rant and rave and, you know, say my opinion or whatever, you guys are awesome. You truly are. Thank you so much for all the love and support. So, alrighty guys, we will catch y'all in just a few days for The Terror of Mechagodzilla. And this is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.